From breaking news.
What are we doing?
To breaking balls.
They all move slow now, and they all just want to play softball.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Yeah, but this is not the news I'm getting at.
I'm talking on my ass.
All right, well, that's good to know.
And now, the show that's all about baseball.
That's when the game, to me, is at its best.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Bigelow Tea, KM Hot Dogs, I Promise, official eye vitamin of the Boston Red Sox, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, and Window World.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Two down in the ninth. 1-2. Kike strikes out, and Iglesias locks it up. The Angels win it 5-4 in Anaheim, and they take the rubber game from the Sox.
Not a good one. It's going to be a quiet one. A lot of opportunities missed tonight, today. How many guys were left on?
The Sox leave six, and they fall by a run to the Angels.
That's how it ended in Anaheim. Another tight game. Red Sox lose 5-4. Lost the last two of that road trip. They were 3-1. No, they won the second one, actually. Right? I take that back. Lost two out of three to Anaheim, but they were, you know, 2-1 going into the final series. To finish 3-3 was a bit of a disappointment. But I've been out all week, so I got a bunch of things I want to catch up on tonight. And Matt McCarthy's been kind enough to join alongside here this evening. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Hour. And we'll open up the phone lines right away because, again, I want to talk to a lot of you after what was an eventful road trip for the Red Sox. But as I said, they went to Anaheim. They lost two out of three. They lost the finale yesterday. And I listened to the programs this week, so I know generally what people have been saying. And I know that the talk yesterday branched into, or in the last couple of days, branched into a bigger discussion about the state of baseball and where it ranks in popularity here in Boston and in other places, which I also want to get to. So let me start with this. You know why this branched into a bigger discussion about baseball? Because nobody talks about the actual games anymore. Okay, we just accept it as a big picture sport in a marathon that kind of goes on while we're living our lives. And then when they get to the final, call it few miles, the month of September, maybe August, when they get to that stage, we all tune in the home stretch and we want to see who wins. But the fact is that the baseball season is so long and there are so many games and the quality of the product has deteriorated so much that nobody actually, we don't have the same intensity for it that we did 10 years ago. More, 15. We just don't. And if you can't accept that, that part is on you. So, and I say that to you as a baseball fan. So just stop fighting it. It's not the same. They've won two World Series. It'll never be. They've won four World Series. But the second one was really the one that put it over the edge. I was always the one that I always focused on that 07. After the 07 World Series, things started to change. In 07, the Red Sox set an all-time high in this market for television ratings. After that year, they started to go down. Last year, they were at I have to believe, an all-time low in the modern era. Okay, so that aside. Now, as it pertains to the 2021 Red Sox, the idea that all of a sudden, some of the gloating that has gone on here this week, Matt McCarthy, really raised my ire. It irked the crap out of me.
You're talking about the organization's gloating.
Okay.
Not on the airwaves. That's what you're referencing.
But not just the organization, which I'll get to in a minute. But it starts with that the bio on the Red Sox Twitter account, and you're going to have to help me with this, but said something to the effect earlier in the week of, remember all those tweets that all of you put out there on the first weekend of the season? Well, we remember them.
Remember your tweets from the first week of the season? We do.
Okay. So again, now the Red Sox are taking names. Okay, taking names and they're lining up to kick our asses.
Thank God I always believe, Maz. Thank God they don't have my name.
Okay, then they went out and they lost two out of three to the Angels, who are an inferior team. And when I say that, it's not just the gloating of the Red Sox Twitter account. How about this headline in the Boston Globe here in the last couple of days? Okay, Alex Spears' online column, which he's done for a long time, 108 stitches. This is the headline on it. Red Sox starters have been reliable, but who would you trust to start game two of a playoff series? Is this really what we're going to do on July 8th? You're going to start worrying about game two of the playoffs? Who's going to start game two? And look, I'm not blaming Alex, but I look at it and said, stop putting the cart ahead of the horse. Listen, it's a fun team. They've been really enjoyable this year. And you know why they've been enjoyable? Because they've overachieved, which means they're playing above their heads. They're playing above their level. So as soon as you start to say, remember those tweets from early in the year? Or you start to say, geez, who starts game two of the playoffs? Which I think is curious for a number of reasons. Like, I'm not sure who's starting game one, let alone game two. And then the obvious point of, are you sure you're even going to be in the playoffs? Because it feels that way, yes. And I think it's okay to recalibrate and set new standards. I think that's all right. But are you really going to take anything for granted with this team this year after the way the last year and a half has gone on the field?
Believe it or not, Maz, yes, I will. They should be in the playoffs. I'm okay with talking about playoffs, and it goes back to recalibrating our expectations, which I have done. You and I both felt that the Red Sox were somewhere, what, in the 85-win kind of ballpark at the beginning of the year. I think I said 84 games. I think you were in the same ballpark. Maz, they're going to be in the playoffs. They better be in the playoffs. It will be a massive, massive failure if they're not in the playoffs. So I'm all for recalibrating our expectations and saying, you know what, who would start a playoff series? You know why? That's an important discussion right now because the organization better be having that discussion because they better go out and improve this team at the deadline. Listen, I agree that they shouldn't be doing all this gloating and saying, we remember the tweets, all that. I understand that. They're one of the best teams in the American League, even if they are overachieving. And they are. But it's okay to overachieve, which they have, and it's okay to recalibrate our expectations. Because even if they are overachieving, they should be in the mix for the pennant. They should be in the mix for the playoffs. I firmly believe they can compete for the pennant. I'm not saying I'd pick them to do it. I'm not saying I'd pick them to win it. But they're in the mix, and I don't see them falling out of the mix at this point, even if they come back to earth a little bit.
So, Matt, none of what you said gives me any cause for frustration. I don't have a problem with anything you just said. I think it's okay to recalibrate the standards. But this idea that, like, it's now a given, which is what game two of the playoffs is. Who's going to pitch game two? So now you're in? Now you're in?
They better be.
Everyone just assumes they're in? So let me tell you a couple things about this team that I think you should worry about. And I'll start with this one, which is the most obvious. Their health has been off the charts good.
Yeah, you had made this point earlier. They have been the healthiest team in baseball. And guys like Nathan Eovaldi, who are carrying you. Not exactly a picture of fine health in the past, right, with all of his elbow problems.
So go through the whole rotation. They've made every turn. Eduardo Rodriguez did not break camp with the team because he had a tired arm.
Yep.
They called it arm fatigue or whatever at the end of camp. I thought it was worse. But he did join them a little ways into the season, a week into the season or so.
Yeah, Houck made one start for him.
Okay.
That's it.
And so Eduardo Rodriguez has not missed a turn since. None of them have. They've all taken the ball every 5 days. Whether it's been, two innings, six innings is irrelevant. The fact that they've taken the ball every 5 days means you've had no chaos, no anarchy, no instability in your pitching staff. Matt Barnes has stayed healthy. Ottavino has stayed healthy. Hernandez and Taylor have been on the staff all year long. They've been healthy. You've had no major injuries on the pitching staff at all. Nobody you've lost for any length of time. J.D. Martinez missed a handful of days in a row at one point. I don't remember if his back was acting up. There was something going on.
It's a wrist injury, right? An awkward slide, I think.
Okay, so it was a wrist. That's exactly right. So, okay, he missed a few days, but he didn't go on the DL. Bogaerts missed a day here or there. Verdugo had a hamstring issue that lasted a few days. But none of them went on the IL. The only guys who have gone on the IL, Christian Arroyo, I think it's happened a couple of times now. Enrique Hernandez was on there and came right back. They've been unbelievably healthy. Unbelievably healthy. And that's good. Will the pitching hold up? I don't know. Nathan Eovaldi's on pace for basically a career high in innings. Eduardo Rodriguez is a 150 inning guy, my experience. I don't know whether he'll hold up or not. Nick Pivetta is going to be in uncharted water here any minute. Garrett Richards has already pitched the second highest inning total of his career, I think it is.
Yeah, he's always been hurt.
So the only guy you can look at and say has had any history of durability, and I say durability meaning that he's consistently been in the 150 inning range, at least a handful of times is Martin Perez.
Yeah, a guy who spent the majority of his career going out there every 5 days consistently and getting the bag beaten out of him.
Okay, so that's number one. You've been extraordinarily healthy. The second thing is, let's face it, when the new rules went into effect, your pitching sucked for about 3 weeks and you finished with a winning record. Do you think that's a sustainable model and a way to win consistently? So I don't. So here's what I'm here to tell you if you are a Red Sox fan or a Red Sox follower. When people say, well, they've been lucky too, what are you taking it personally for? What are you getting upset about that for? It's true. They've been lucky. They've had an inordinate number of come-from-behind wins, which is a credit to their bullpen and their lineup. But they've had no injuries to the big three, particularly in the middle of that batting order. Four, if you want to count Verdugo. They've had no injuries in the rotation. So they've been well-managed, well-run. I'll give you all that. But guys get hurt all the time, despite good managing and good coaching. Happens all the time. And good overall organizational management. So count your blessings. Be grateful that they are where they are. But don't get stupid and start asking questions about who's going to pitch game two when the fact is you haven't even won the division yet. Now, do I like their chances, and is it their division to lose? Should we put more expectations on them? Yes, 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 100%. But once you start sort of thumbing your nose and look at us, remember that's how you ended up in this whole freaking mess in the first place.
2019.
That team was coming off 119 wins, 108 in the regular season, 11 more in the playoffs, and then they went into a coma. Because you know what? They didn't take it seriously, and they got a little too cocky for their own good. So don't get stupid about it. 617-779-0985. I want to get to another story, or a story, rather, by Kenny Rosendahl of The Athletic that highlights some of the, what's the right word, inconsistencies with the Red Sox in 2021. And I see a number of you lined up already. We'll get to all of your phone calls, I promise, when we come back on the Baseball Hour. And Matt McCarthy's alongside.
Talking baseball with Tony Mass.
This is the Red Sox we're talking about.
It's the Baseball Hour on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Red Sox would like to remind the haters that they remember your tweets from the first week of the season. You know, when they got swept by the Orioles, how those bad takes turn out for you. You know, don't even bother deleting, because the internet never forgets.
Hey, Jimmy Stewart or Matt McCarthy, you guys can help me out with that. Was that on Nesson the other day? Is that what that was?
Yes.
So that was Tuesday morning on Nesson.
Okay, so that was, you know, Courtney Cox or Seely Godwin or someone like that, right? I don't know which, you know, again, I didn't see it. We played that earlier on Felger.
It was recorded off of Felger's phone in the kitchen because he saw it, and, you know, while he was scratching his ass, waking up for coffee.
Okay, so the idea that, like, you know, those takes won't age well. I mean, Matt McCarthy knows. He went off on him that first weekend.
Sure do, Maz. Okay. Blah, McCarthy, blah.
Okay. Did the Red Sox deserve it that weekend?
Yes.
So where's the gray area? And by the way, I would also say, what have they won? They haven't won a thing. And by the way, I would also like to add Cora into this discussion, because I like Cora as a manager. I'm glad he's back. And I think Cora is one of the big reasons the Red Sox are where they are.
He's the reason, Mass.
I think he's restored credibility. I think he's restored a whole big league sort of culture. I think that they're legit again. Okay, the Red Sox are legit. And Chaim Bloom's had a good year. I mean, you know, between Hunter Renfroe and even Martin Perez. And,
Whitlock.
Yeah, all of it.
A wizardry finding Whitlock.
Yes.
My God.
He's done a good job. So a lot of things have gone right for them this year, and they needed to.
Franchi.
Cora said at the beginning of the year when we asked him about the World Series, look, this isn't World Series or bust. You know, it's not like 2018. And I'm paraphrasing. Then 10 days ago, he said something to the effect of, someone said, well, what are your expectations for this team now? And he said, our expectations are to win the World Series. And so I think even Cora got caught up in it a little bit. That, hey, you know, we got a good team. Okay, I agree. They're good. They're not great. So let's not act like they're great. Which brings me to that story in The Athletic by Kenny Rosendahl. But let me put that on pause there for a second. We'll get to that in a moment. We'll take a couple of phone calls first. Kevin is in North Smithfield. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, guys. I'm happy to be the first caller ever into the Baseball Hour back when you started. But anyway, I haven't watched any games this year. Don't hang up right away. I loved it in 2009, 2010. I used to have a calendar. I wrote down every score, every W, every L. What has changed, and how can I get back to it?
Okay, you tell me. What's changed for you, Kevin?
Well, my first answer would be probably David and Manny.
Okay, so look, that's a good one, too. I mean, you had a prolific duo in the middle of that lineup that do the statistical comparison.
Ruth and Gehrig.
Yeah, they really were.
Yeah.
I mean, they were kind of like Ruth and Gehrig in the middle of the lineup. That's what you had. And you had a, you know, an in-your-face winning kind of organization. You had Theo, you had Francona. So I would tell you what changed is that a year after that, if you said 09 and 10, 11 they collapsed, Theo and Francona went out the door and everything changed. So I, you know, but the reality is the interest in the team had already started to wane by then.
Sure. The pursuit had died down. You know, it's something historic, and we talked about this in the context of the Patriots the other day, Maz. You know, when you're dug in on this team for 20 years, when you're watching something truly historic, the way you were with the Red Sox, the pursuit, 86 years, the drought, everything, you get caught up in that. You do. It will never be that way for the Red Sox ever again. I don't think it'll ever be that way for the Patriots ever again because it was an all-time thing. I'm not saying that the Patriots are going to turn into what the Red Sox are now and football's going to turn into that. But when you're caught up in an all-time pursuit and an all-time experience, that's what we were in the middle of 15 years ago, the height of the rivalry. The Red Sox hadn't won in 86 years, the pain, the suffering, all that. It was so easy to live and die by every single game. You can't recreate that. You just can't. And then the issues with the game, too, and the pace of play and the time commitment and all that, the world's gotten busier. It's not good for baseball.
Yeah, and we hung on every pitch.
Yes, we did.
We hung on every decision. So, again, I'll ask the listeners this rhetorically, but if you have an answer, go ahead. There was a specific instance that I remember from the series with Oakland that I want to get to. But let me ask the listeners this. In these games over the last 6 days, the ones in Oakland, because the Oakland series I thought was fabulous.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was a great series.
Good take. Okay.
What was the most controversial decision that Alex Cora made in the last week? Anyone have one? Jimmy Stewart, do you have one? Matt McCarthy, anybody?
I think Cora's managed about as perfectly as you can. I would never second-guess the manager.
Okay, did we ever say that back in 2007, 2004, 2008, even 2011? Did we ever say there was nothing to second-guess about the Red Sox manager?
I never second-guessed Harry Francona. Never.
Well,
I know you didn't, Jimmy.
But you see my point.
Yeah.
Is we were so dialed into every game that anything that happened, we knew what it was. You know what the discussion is about the Red Sox now? Are they good enough? What are they going to do with the deadline? It's all big picture, general kind of stuff, because this is how people watch baseball now.
It's how they consume it. It's how they follow it.
Right. It's about the marathon. So you don't dig in and watch the first 5 miles of the marathon. You don't watch the first 13. You watch the last two. And I think that that's what baseball is now. And it may be that way here forever. Tony's in Stoneham. Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, you're missing one thing, Maz. The big thing this year is this. There's no big team. There's no great team out there today. Who are you going to pick? Houston? The Dodgers? And the Red Sox got a better record than them.
Okay, so, Tony, look, maybe you're talking about the league, although you mentioned the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers are a great team.
I do, too.
I think the Dodgers are a great roster.
Yeah.
That team's stacked.
Yeah, they're significantly better than you.
I think that San Diego team's a good team.
I agree.
And I actually think the Astros are pretty good, and the A's are, too.
I think the Brewers are pretty good with that pitching staff, too. Better teams than the Red Sox.
So now, do I think Oakland's going to win the World Series or Houston? Probably not.
Oakland won't win a playoff series, Maz. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that.
I think it'll be one of those two teams in the National League. Okay? But those are good teams. I'm just telling you that. I'm talking about the way we watch the game. Again, let me ask the question. What was the most controversial decision that Alex Cora made in the last 2 weeks? Or last week. Sorry, last two series. What was it?
How about pitching to Ohtani with Ottavino?
Okay, so he ended up getting him out.
Yep.
Right?
Which, by the way, I think was the right decision. You look at the reverse split. Like, Ohtani kills lefties.
Okay.
He does.
So that's a good one, though, but at least you remember it. Again, happened at the very end of the game. So everyone remembers it because it was the final at bat.
And it was Ohtani, too, the reason to watch.
Right. But in the past, we scrutinized every move. Every move. We don't do that now.
God, I miss that.
Which tells you what the intensity level is like. It's just not the same. And that's okay. That's okay. I'm just telling you, when people say that baseball is sort of in the background, they're right. It's true. That's the way it is. Jacob's in a car. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, so statistically speaking, what's the number difference in TV ratings between 07 and now?
Oh, my God, you're not even half of what you were in 07.
Okay, so my question is, what position would you trade for at the deadline? I'm thinking a first baseman or an outfielder that hits for average.
So, Jacob, I wouldn't make one deal. I think they have enough to make two. And I like the idea of another consistent bat in the lineup. I think that would help. And I love the idea of another arm, maybe even two, depending on what you're talking about. Although if Sale joins, you bring Duran up. Like, now you're talking integrating potentially three or four players in a couple of different spots. I don't know what your chief need is, Matt, so go ahead.
No, primary. It's exactly what you just said. They need another starting pitcher, somebody that you could rely on. In the event that Sale doesn't come back, you know, something happens there. I'm not saying you need to go out and add an ace, but just get another big league starting pitcher, a Danny Duffy type, somebody like that. And you need a professional hitter who's a corner infielder, corner outfielder, can play some first base, can maybe play a little outfield for you. They can't be trotting Bobby Dahl back out there in important games and important situations. You just can't do that. And they should make both moves, even with bringing Duran up and even with Chris Sale coming back. Because I don't want to count on a kid coming up from Worcester. Maybe he gives you a massive spark and he's your leadoff hitter and all that. Sure, that'd be great, but I don't want to count on it. The same way I don't want to count on a guy coming off Tommy John, even though he is your wild card and maybe he's your ace in the hole. You just can't count on it.
Speaking of Danny Duffy, was Alan in Florida giving you grief yesterday or the day before?
Oh, yeah, a couple days ago. We had a good time with Alan. He wouldn't wait on for 20 minutes on Monday when I was in for you guys and called up and ripped me for not taking the call. So love you, Alan. Mean it. I love his calls.
I've always admired Alan's passion, but next time he calls, tell him to go pound sand, man. Thomas is in Cambridge.
I pretty much did.
Thomas, what do you got?
Hey, guys. Talking about the viewership of younger viewers, it's part of the blame has to go on Nesson. I don't know anyone from the age of 20 to 30 that has cable TV. There's really no way to watch the games unless you have cable TV. Nesson's only streamed on Fubo TV, which I've never even heard of, and then AT&T TV, and no one has those. So how is anyone in the age group of 20 to 30 going to watch the game?
Okay, so look, that's another good point. As like, you know, and that's one of the things you look at with the Red Sox, who own Nesson, and say, well, that's not exactly a smart move, is it?
No.
You know, you're trying to cultivate young viewers, and yet there's no way for them to watch the game if they've cut the cord, which is preposterous. So, look, I've asked the question a couple of times. I still don't have a call on it. What was the most controversial move that Alex, or questionable move in your mind, that Alex Cora made over the six games on the West Coast trip? I'm not asking you one game. I'm asking you for six, which means you didn't watch any of them, not in their entirety. And I'll admit, I didn't either. But I do have a specific moment that stuck out to me in a game while I was watching it, not in some highlight package. While I was watching it, there was a specific moment that stuck out to me, and I said, huh, why did Cora do that? And you know what? Nobody even asked it after the game. So I'll tell you what that was after we come back. McCarthy's got your headlines.
Whether it's happening on the field or off, Mass is talking about it.
What should we expect from Alex Cora's Red Sox in 2021?
The Baseball Hour on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The most pitches in any one outing for Matt Barnes this season. Hours after he found out from Alex Cora this morning that he's an all-star for the first time in his career. In the bottom of the ninth inning is 0-2. He strikes out Brown. Sox win.
Yes.
A milestone punch out to boot for Matt Barnes.
How about that, Ellis? It was like that all weekend here.
All weekend. My goodness.
That was from Sunday, the win over Oakland. Red Sox took 2 out of 3. All good games. All one-run games.
They were awesome, weren't they?
3-2, 5-4, 1-0, I think it was, or something like that. And so I thought it was, you know, I thought it was great theater in that last game. Barnes didn't have it. Did not have it. You could see from the second he got out there, like, uh-oh, here we go. Like, you know, this is Barnes. I thought it was one of his worst outings of the year in terms of stuff. Did not have it. Curveball was hanging, rolling. It was not the same. He didn't have quite the same zip on the fastball, and I thought, uh-oh, they're going to lose. They squeaked it out. They win one zip. Again, so I asked the question, of all the things that Alex Cora did on this road trip, what was the decision that you went, oh, geez, I didn't like that. That was stupid. And I've gotten one call. One. Because again, this is nobody watches the game with that sort of intensity or scrutiny anymore. We just don't. Lee's in Virginia. Lee, what was the most controversial decision of the week in your mind?
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you taking a call. Enjoy the station. So for me, it was Cora deciding to go with Andreese to close out the game in extra innings instead of running Barnes back out there. I know his pitch count was high the night before, but you had a chance to sweep, and I just think you should have gone for it.
Okay, so Lee, in that instance, were you watching the game live?
I was, actually, yes. Okay. And I was streaming the game.
Okay, no. Listen, I'll give you credit for it. Because, again, I think a lot of people can look at – it's always easy to look at the end of a game or look at it in a box score or read the story and go, well, why'd you bring in that guy in that situation? Like, those are big ones.
Yeah.
But we used to micromanage everything.
Used to think in the moment.
Yeah. So let me tell you the one that stuck out to me. Okay? And I don't think anyone asked. I'm not surprised because nobody asks anything about game strategy anymore. Even the people that cover the team don't do it.
Well, I want to know, Maz. So
okay.
There you go.
Well, no, but they didn't do it when I covered. No one ever asked about game strategy. It used to piss me off. And somehow you were the bad guy if you asked about game strategy. So in the 1-0 game, in the ninth inning, top of the ninth, the Red Sox get a leadoff double from Rafael Devers. It's been a tight series, tight game the whole way. Okay? Why not bunt him the third?
I agree.
Why not move him over? Mm-hmm. Nobody asked it. He let Christian Vasquez hit. He didn't hit the ball deep enough. It was a bloop to right. Devers couldn't advance, and the next two guys made outs, and that was the end of it.
And Vasquez is one of the few guys on the team that you would actually feel comfortable laying down a bunt because he can handle the bat a little bit. He's not a great hitter, but he can handle the bat.
Now, the next two batters were Marwin Gonzalez and Danny Santana. So my guess is, and this is a guess, that Cora looked at that situation and said, if I get him to third, I'm not confident that either one of those guys can put the ball in play. They'll both strike out. Or, you know, Oakland will attack them, or they'll walk one and one will hit it, you know, whatever it was. Cora looked at it and said, I don't like the matchup, and I'm not going to do it. And it would not shock me if he said to Vasquez or gave him the signal, get him over. You want to bunt. You want to hit, you know, to the right side, hit to the right. Because Vasquez is actually one of the few guys that has decent back control, and that Cora will hit and run with. So I thought, okay, when I saw the ball go in the air to right field, I said, well, he got the job done, but it wasn't deep enough and the runner couldn't go. So, you know, sometimes a manager will say, and I remember Francona used to do this, a manager will say, it's literally a get him over sign. That's what it is. Just get him over. You do it however you want. Okay? If you're more comfortable putting the bat on the ball, go ahead. So, but they didn't get him over. And for a team that, at least we think, or is getting credit for manufacturing some runs, doing some little things, hitting the ball the other way, they didn't do it in that spot. And honestly, I put that one on Cora because I look at it and say, make him bunt. Make him bunt. Get the runner to third. The second run means everything in that game.
1,000%.
You had a leadoff double. It was like a playoff game. The whole series was tight. So take the second run. It just opens up a wealth of possibilities, a sacrifice fly, a wild pitch, which you lost on in Tampa, a pass ball, an error. You bring the infield in, maybe the bloop falls in.
And it makes it easier on Gonzalez and Santana, too, because all they need to do is lift the ball to the outfield, but they don't need a knock. They need to put their bat on the ball. It makes it a little bit easier on those guys who can't hit, as we know.
All right, or just make contact and push it through a holdout that the infield's in. Whatever it is, he didn't do it. But again, that stuff never comes up anymore because the individual games are not as important to us anymore. There's no other way to explain it. We think of baseball in the big picture and in the marathon sense, but we don't think of it in the details anymore. We just don't. Blake's in Boston. Go ahead, Blake.
Hey, so I got a question for you, Maz, about the prospect system. I think I called Matt about it last week. It was about Jeter Downs and how there hasn't been as much belief in him as there is in guys like Cassis and Duran.
Okay.
I was wondering your thoughts on that, and you know, when is it okay to start trading Downs and lose belief in him because he hasn't had a great year this year?
Okay, so Blake, I will tell you that on all things minor league, I will defer to Matt Murray. If Matt Murray told you that Jeter Downs is not having a great year and they're not high on him, then I would take that to the bank.
He's not having a great year. I can't speak to how they feel on him. I don't have any juice on that. I can tell you how I feel. When I don't hear much on a guy, when I don't hear a lot of juice, a lot of buzz on a guy, it kind of perks up a little bit. And I didn't hear much from him in the alternate site last year. You certainly haven't heard much about him this year. He has not had a great year for Worcester. It's been a little bit better as the year went on. He got off to an awful start. I think he's been hurt. This one might be, you know how people were excited about Jeter Downs? I might pump the brakes on this one a little bit. That's just a sense. I haven't been told that. My gut generally leads me in the right direction here, though. If there were a deal out there, because he's still a top 100 prospect, like let's say you can get a Herman Marquez from Colorado and they say we need a guy like Downs, I'd do it today. I'd absolutely do it.
Okay, he's a key guy in that Mookie Betts deal.
1,000%.
He's a key guy in that. If we're going to judge the trade, he's a key guy in that deal. My guess is that Bloom will not trade him. They're going to give him another year at least. Tom's in Quincy. Tom, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, I want to talk about this whole, the Red Sox, you know, gloating of the Red Sox the past couple of days, specifically with the Twitter bio and all that. If you notice, which I've noticed, the hyping of the Red Sox in the past couple of days is coming out from the team itself and then the arms of the team,
right?
Be it Spear at the Globe or, you know, Nesson, you know, having the girl that's on in the morning hype up the bio and all that stuff. So that's a little frustrating to me. The Alex Cora thing, I don't hold anything against Cora for saying that his expectations of World Series, because, I mean, he's answering a question. He's not voluntarily just throwing it out there all, you know, just random like that. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. I think it's the arms of the Red Sox kind of hyping it up. But one thing, Tony, real quick.
Sure.
I'll agree with Lee in Virginia, because my opinion is that the mistake that Cora has made countless times this year is the fact that Matt Andreese pitches at all. Because he blows.
Yeah, so Tom.
I'm in favor of moving him aside and go on with somebody else because he sucks.
Yeah, so Tom, I'll tell you what, I don't like Andreese either. And my guess is that in some spots, Cora feels like he doesn't have a shot. There was a game before the one the other night where Andreese got in there because he was basically the longest pitcher they had left. Yeah. I mean, in terms of being stretched out.
I mean, that was Saturday. You know, they basically ran out of arms because they didn't want to use Barnes.
Yeah, so look, he is the, you know, he's the anchor man in that case, right? He's the guy that's going to go the rest of the way. That's it.
Yeah, he's the Ryan Weber. You're going to get the crap beaten out of you, and you're going to take this for the team.
I mean, when you start playing a lot of games in a short amount of time, or you have some long games, you know, extra innings or what have you, sooner or later you run into a spot where there's somebody at the end of the bullpen that's going to get the ball for five innings, and that's it. Like, you don't have anyone else to go to. And so, no, I'm not telling you that justifies it, because Andreese, to me, has been a complete bust. I think the guy sucks. I've never been an Andreese fan, and, you know, I understand that was an analytics decision, too. Guy who couldn't make it as a starter, well, if we use him in the bullpen for two innings, maybe we'll get something out of him, and I just don't see it.
Real quick, I don't think he's long for here. Tanner Houck's probably going to be up after the All-Star break, and that's a significant, significant upgrade.
Yeah, so again, between Houck, maybe Sale, yep. Jaron Duran, and I think you can integrate some of these guys, even if it's in September, to help you. You know, the Red Sox make a couple of deals, too. Now you've got, you know, 3, 4, maybe even 5 guys helping out the roster a little bit. I think that can make a difference. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Hour. I want to play for you what I thought was the best play of the road trip, good or bad, when we come back, and we'll wrap it up with your phone calls.
From breaking news,
what are we doing?
To breaking balls.
They all move slow now, and they all just want to play softball.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Murphy in the center. Hernandez lines it up. Brown to the plate. The throw! He got him!
Excellent throw.
Oh, what a dart from Kike.
Line to left. Martinez coming in. He'll make the catch. Murphy's tagging. Here comes the throw to the plate. It will be out at the plate. J.D. Martinez throws him out at the plate, and we go to the 11th.
Some good stuff there from the Red Sox in the Oakland series. I go back to the first game. I was actually fixated on another play. A little more negative than that one, but we'll get to that in a
Shocker.
minute.
Shocker.
And Matt McCarthy.
Welcome back, Matt.
Matt McCarthy set me straight. That Hernandez throw on Friday night. Boy, what a play that was.
That's why they bring me in, Maz. What can I say?
Ironically enough, the Saturday throw that didn't get the out at the plate in the bottom of the 11th inning was a better one. It was a perfect one, but it was just a touch late.
It's a dart. Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
he's pretty good in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's a good defensive player. Yeah. And they have a lot of guys who are good ball players. I mean, Cora's described the team that way a lot, and he's right. They're not all great players. They're not great offensive players, but they want to play. They play hard. They can do different things. Hernandez can play multiple positions. Yeah, I don't love Hernandez as a player. When he was with the Dodgers, I thought he was wildly overrated.
They used him way too much.
He's also benefited from the fact that there's no more sticky stuff. Offensively, he's been better since June 4th.
Absolutely, Jimmy. But the one thing I will say is he's a ball player, right? He'll play hard.
He's a glue guy. Maybe he's not the best player you have, but if he's your 8 or your 9 hitter and you're kind of moving him around a little bit, you can do a hell of a lot worse.
And I admit, for me, it was a low standard this year because they sucked so bad last year. I just wanted guys who had a pulse, for crying out loud. But now that they're in it, I'm going to expect more down the stretch. I'll tell you, the other play of the week on the West Coast, that was a great, great one. And it didn't go the Red Sox way, but it was huge in a game against the Angels. Go ahead, Jimmy.
The 0-1. Bogart swings and lifts it to right center. Lagares is back. He jumps up and he makes the catch. Oh, man, he took it away from Bogarts.
When Xander hit this ball, I just knew it was extra bases. But I tell you, Lagares is known for his defense, and it shows up again right here. Outstanding play. Looked like he got over the wall as well. That could have been a home run.
I mean, the outfield defense overall on the trip was really good. Mm-hmm. Both teams.
Yeah.
Both teams. I mean, you know, Red Sox and whoever they were playing. I mean, Hernandez even had one. It wasn't a great play, but he jumped at the wall and took a ball from over the top of the line.
How many outfield assists did they have? And what game was it? I'm trying to remember. You know, they all blend together. They had like 3 outfield assists. You're like, my God, stop running on these guys.
So you know why we can talk about outfield defense, Matt McCarthy? Because there were balls in play. Because there were balls in play. See, this is the kind of thing you get in baseball. When fielders actually have to show their athleticism, you see defense, you see good catches, you see good throws, you see actual stuff that is exciting to watch instead of strikeout, walk, home run. That's it. Now you actually get plays. We'll take a couple more calls here, but you got to go quick so we can get to everybody. Mike's in Connecticut. Go.
Hey, Maz, I don't know if you know, but McCarthy is against a Craig Kimbrel reunion. He's a .57 ERA this year. He's right back on his streaky, really good year kind of year. How do you feel about him coming back for a bullpen that is playing way above their head right now?
No thanks. I'm with McCarthy. No thanks. I want something better.
Not at the cost.
I don't trust that guy for a second.
Same.
Not for a second. David's in Nashville. David, go.
Hey, what's going on, man? All right. So should the Sox go after Jack Leiter or Kumar Rocker at number 4 in the draft?
Okay, so I like Leiter. I like Leiter.
Love that guy.
Okay, and I'll tell you why I like Leiter over Rocker. Rocker is the bigger, more durable, more powerful arm and body. Leiter knows how to pitch. And so I will take the guy who's got a clue. I'd be lying if I told you that I didn't have a higher opinion of him because his father was in the big leagues. But I want the guy on the mound who's got command, who's got some poise. You know, I don't need the greatest arm all the time, but that probably makes me an idiot.
No, I would listen. If Leiter's there at 4, you must take him. I don't think he's going to fall to 4. I'm not 100% buying it. If he's there at 4, you must take him. I would take Rocker at 4 because you're never going to be up that high again. You know, go with the ceiling, or I take the catcher out of Louisville. Do not give me a high school bat at number 4. No thanks. Give me a college player, preferably an arm, but a catcher. You get a college catcher who's, you know, a top 5 pick. Oh, man, I'll take that, too, at that position.
I'd like pitching. Sean's in Wakefield. Go, Sean, quickly.
Maz, my second guess about Cora is in the first game against the A's, pulling Erod with 89 pitches going into the seventh inning. We end up using our bullpen. They blow it. We go into extras. The following day, we end up pulling in Rios because we have no other arms, and he gives up 2 runs. We end up losing that game.
Sean, good one. Good one. That one bugged me, too. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. See, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. That you look at, it's in the middle of the game. You're watching the game. You said Rodriguez is coasting along. He's pitching well. You know, again, looks like he's turned the corner, and all of a sudden he's out. And you think, well, wait, it's 89. It's not 99. Like, you can get another inning out of him, can't you? Mm-hmm. He can't go to 105. So that one, I agree. I mean, and I watched that game up to that point. I don't typically stay up that late anymore, Matt. Just doesn't work. I'm an early riser. So, but that one, I agree, is a good second guess. But again, nobody brings this crap up anymore. We used to be able to do hours on a pitching decision.
Still wish we could.
Yeah.
I love it.
The game's not the same anymore. In any case, Matt, thanks for filling in.
Always.
Filling in the past few days and helping out tonight.
Always good to be here.
Matt's usually with us on Fridays, but he's not going to be here tomorrow.
That's right. Correct? Murray's in tomorrow, so we're doing a quick little switcheroo because I'm up next, Matt.
Oh, I'm sure that Murray will be useful on a Friday.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Have fun.
During summer. No, that'll go well.
When it's pouring rain in a tropical storm.
Who do we
got? Thank God I'm here for you, Tony.
Thank you, Jimmy. Yes. Who do we get tonight? Is it Jones and Arcan?
Right here. Matt McCarthy.
Oh, it's you.
Yes.
Oh.
Hence why I'm in tonight.
By yourself?
Brendan Glasheen is here.
Okay.
We're taking you until 11 o'clock tonight.
McCarthy and Glasheen. There you go. And McCarthy's got your headlines, and it'll take you for the next 5 hours. See you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.